Hi, this is Jim Swilly. Welcome to Metron Live. Metron is a Greek word that means sphere of influence. I believe in living your best life possible, and that's the reason for this podcast. This is my Metron. Now let me help you discover yours. Welcome to the Metron Live podcast, coming to you live from beautiful, historic Midtown Atlanta. Metron people, give the podcast people a big hand. We love the podcastians. Greetings to the people of Podcastia. We welcome you. From the kingdom of Metrononia. We'll end today, if you're listening to the podcast, we'll end today with a meditation. You can observe it with us. But, you know, really, when you look in the Psalms, most of the Psalms were written by David. And in Davidic Psalms, you'll see, especially the longer ones, you'll see the word Selah, S-E-L-A-H. And, you know, all of the Psalms originally, they're songs. The word psalm means song. So they're lyrics to songs. And when David would include a Selah, it was a musical cue for the musicians to play an interlude, because people were meant to meditate on the stanzas that had just been sung. It was like, we'll sing a couple of verses and then the music's going to play and let you meditate. And that's what I want you to think about today. What I'm about to share with you, we'll end it with a meditation, and the meditation is your Selah. If you look in the Amplified Bible, it says Selah, pause and calmly think of that, which means meditation. Meditation is contemplation. So you just need to think about it. I was mentioning my cousin LaDonna a lot. Today's her birthday, by the way. Happy birthday. But she was telling me, I listen to your, she listens every Sunday, and then she'll write me a long review of everything. And she listens to everything. I don't know anybody that listens more than her, because she's just like, she'll give me really good feedback. But she said, you know, the day you talked about Rudolph back at Christmas, she said, I just turned my device off and just sat there quietly and just meditated on it. It was just, you know, it just created such an atmosphere. And I love that. I love when people get what you're doing. Not everybody gets it. Some people would have heard Jesus' parables and think, well, he's just lecturing on agriculture. What's that? He's just talking about, you know, planting seeds. And if that's what you think, then, yeah, that's adorable. Thank you. But there's other people like you who get it. So my title this month is Open the Eyes of My Heart, Meditation and 2020 Vision for 2020. And I've noticed everybody in every church is talking about 2020 Vision. You can't not. Jude and I were talking about it last week. I said, there's no way you could ignore the words 2020 having the connection with vision. So, and I'm always happy to talk about vision. So I'm just going to share four things with you. The first one, I just shared this yesterday, and I've shared it before, and Lord knows I've spent a lot of time in Mark 11:23 over the years. But I do really love this in the Jonathan Mitchell New Testament. Let me just share this, because I want to create something with these words. Here he says, indeed I am now saying, or I'm truly saying now, that whoever may say to this mountain, or in this mountain, be picked up and be cast or thrown into the midst of the sea, and may not be undecided or be divided in his discernment. I love that phrase. Be divided in his discernment or judgment within his heart, but to the contrary, can, may, or would continuously trust and believe with confidence that what he is speaking is what? Progressively occurring. Manifestation happens incrementally. Birthing itself. Oh, okay. Birthing itself, coming into existence, it will proceed being thus for him or by him or to him or in him or with him. I'm just going to make some observations. This is going to be a little bit of a stream of consciousness, but just meet me up here and hear me with your spirit. last week, I talked about asking Spirit, what is the meaning? Why are so many of my praise reports about me losing something and finding something? Because at a certain point, you start thinking, am I just absent-minded? I mean, is that all my miracles are about? And the more I thought about it, I thought, you know, this has been happening to me for years. Like, I remember when I graduated from high school, I don't even know if people still wear class rings, but back then I had bought a class ring for graduation, and I paid for it myself, and it was my, you know, I was really proud of it. And I went to college in Florida, and several of us had gone to the beach one day, and I had taken the ring off on the beach, and when we got back to school that night, I said, you know what, I left my ring on the beach. And I got Howie to drive. I said, we've got to drive back. I got to find it. He said, there were hundreds of people out on that beach today. How are you going to find it? I said, I'm just going to find it. I'm telling you, I'm going to find it. So we drove all the way back over to wherever the heck it was. And the beach was already closed for the night. They had gated it. And I went to the, and sure enough, there was, it was like Mardi Gras out there that day. Just hundreds, I don't want to say thousands, but definitely hundreds of people. And so I'm standing there with my fingers in the chain link fence looking through, and I could see the moonlight hitting this. I just see this little glowing thing, and I said, that's it right there. And he said, how can you tell? I said, I can just tell it's it. He said, what are you going to do? I said, I'm going to jump this fence and go get my ring. And which I did, and I got it, and I had it on the next morning. And it had been there for, I don't know, 6 hours maybe, maybe longer. And then when I was also in college, I was in a singing group that we traveled and toured, and we were on our way to do, we were like up in Chicago and Detroit and all these places, and we stopped. Dad pastored in Atlanta then, and we stopped and sang at his church over here, was on Briarcliff Road at the time. And so that was, this would have been 77, and Peachtree Plaza hadn't been open that long. And none of the kids in my group had ever seen it before. So when we left, I said, after lunch, let me take you on top of the Peachtree Plaza and show you Atlanta. Which in the year 2020, I'm still doing that. I live, you know, I can see it from my roof now. You know, it's like, anyway. So after the service, we had these vans that we traveled in with you know, not wagons. What do you hitch on the back? Trailers. Two word syllable, or two syllable words. So there were guys that were with us that they were responsible for loading the van. So we took all of our stuff. We were on a sidewalk over here in Atlanta, and after we'd had lunch, and the guy was packing our stuff, and I said, I'm going to take everybody to the top of the Peachtree Plaza. Here's my suitcase. Everybody's suitcases were on the sidewalk. We go up there. We were probably up there an hour and a half, maybe. Hundreds of people on the sidewalks of Atlanta, homeless people everywhere, come back, and I get in the van. I said, where's my suitcase? I didn't get it. What do you mean you didn't get it? I put it on the guy didn't, I said, go back over there to Cortlandt Street, right over there to where, it's right down the street from where Safe House is. They said, you think your suitcase is still going to be there? I mean, there's like, do you know how many homeless people are walking? I said, go drive over there. Go over there, and there's my suitcase. Hundreds of people walking around. It's been sitting there on the sidewalk for an hour and a half. So I'm used to things coming back to me or being returned or being preserved. But then I noticed it started happening with y'all. You know, how many times have I mentioned Danny finding that $20 bill in the ATM days later? Or your thing with your sister-in-law's, with finding her wallet in the back seat. You know, there's things you've looked for that you're like, I swear I've just looked for this thing and it was not here. Like with my wedding band. I mean, Ken had looked under that chair. He had pushed it back to vacuum under it. I had looked for it on another day and pushed it forward when we were, I mean, there was no way that ring was under that chair. And then it was under the chair. And then, you know, when, Avery texted me that, you know, she found her on New Year's Day, found her Montblanc pin. And, oh yeah, my gloves. That one sounds so out there. I can't tell that one to everybody. Because I'm telling you, I lost them in New York and I came back and they're neatly folded on my desk at my loft in Atlanta. I mean, and that one didn't even hit me till the next day. I was like, wait a minute. I don't have a third pair. But then I thought, is that it? Is that the extent of my miracle working, is just finding stuff? And I mean, I heard the voice say, no, don't you realize it's symbolic of bigger things? And then I started thinking about people who lost their innocence, people who believed in love and were hurt terribly, people who lost their dream, people who lost their ideals, people who believed in love until a thing happened, people who were idealistic at one time. You know, you've met those people that they were fine until this thing happened, and once that thing happened, they were never the same. They could never, it's like losing your virginity. They could never get it back. It's like I can't ever see life that way. It makes you understand why Jesus brought a child up and put him in his lap, and he said, unless you become like this child, you'll never enter the kingdom. It's because children, now some children have been abused or whatever, but I'm saying children, in general, children haven't, life hasn't stolen from them yet. They don't know what it's like to lose hope. And so it's become very real to me. This isn't about me finding gloves and pens and things. This is about helping people . Jesus said, the Son of Man came to seek and to save that which was lost, not those who were lost. There was something that was here that was lost. But I have to learn how to, get my stuff back out from the bottom of the river. Because once Luke Skywalker knows he can levitate the rock, then he can levitate his spaceship out of the swamp. Right. I can't just jump into helping people find their dream again. Man, it's terrible when somebody's walked in life with a dream and then they lost their dream. Somebody stole their dream. There's nothing, the most evil thing you can ever do to somebody is to steal their dream, steal their hope, steal their ideal, still their sense of purpose. And most of the counseling I've done in my life has been people who had it and lost it. Most people are trying to find what they lost. A lot of them are trying to find what they lost in childhood. That's why I posted this yesterday. I don't remember when I've ever, in the decade I've been on Facebook, I don't remember ever posting anything that had such an immediate outpouring. I was even doing screenshots of some of the comments this morning, putting them on Instagram. I like to do that because when words have life in them and they vibrate, I milk it for all it's worth. I make no apology for that. If I like what you said, I'll photograph it and post it and repost it and Instagram it to Twitter to put it to Facebook. Like, I take that thing as far as I possibly can. And what I was posting yesterday, we were just sitting over here at a place casually, just, you know, we'd already had lunch, we're just sitting there, and I thought, I want to write this right now. It's sometimes I'd rather actually be on my Mac to write something, because it's, you know, it's a little more complicated to write on your phone, but I thought, no, this feels urgent. I need to get this out right now. And immediately the response I started getting let me know, wow. I mean, people prophesying to me, and it was amazing. And what I was saying was, my whole life I first started talking about y'all. I said, for whatever reason, the people of Metron don't ask me for counseling. I mean, in the 5 years I've been here, maybe I've had a couple of counseling appointments with people from here, but I mean, for the most part, I do virtually no counseling with y'all. I would do it if you asked for it, but y'all don't ask. I mean, sometimes you'll let me know you got a need or a situation, and we handle it, like I said, in shorthand. It's basically send some energy, blah, blah, blah. I text back, done. And the next time I see you is like, how did that work out? Oh, yeah, everything's fine. Once I got the text, I'm fine. I'm not saying I wouldn't talk to you. It's just that I don't have any, we're in a different place. That being said, people talk to me all the time who don't know who I am. They don't know I'm a minister. I mean, I can hardly ever, it doesn't happen so much when we're together, although it does, a kind of different thing happens when we're together. Remember that time, you know, we were just sitting on a bench in the park? We're just sitting there. I didn't have my arm around him, and they were just, for all anybody knew, we could have just been two guys sitting on a bench. And we're just sitting there, and this group of people walked by, and this guy goes, "That's what I want." And when I said, "What?" He said, "That, what y'all have, that's what I want." And we looked at each other like, "What?" I mean, we weren't even, I mean, honestly, we're not big into public displays of affection. We're not, you know, we were just sitting on a park bench. But that kind of thing, remember it happened to us in Amsterdam one time. Remember somebody got up and walked over and said, "I don't know what y'all have, but I want that." And we're like, "We do it." I'm looking at my phone like, "What is it? Like, I don't see it." I mean, I see it, but I mean, I'm like, why tonight? Especially because it's just like it's just a Tuesday night. It's not like some big important day. Okay, but I'm also thinking every day's an important day. You know what I mean? Like every day's a holiday. So anyway, what I was posting about is that for years I've had people, strangers, like I remember one time. You remember how how IHOPs used to be? They had that like a big A-frame, like an Alpine kind of thing, and there was a center of booths. Like a row of booths down the center, and there would be like a little divider between the booths so that if you're sitting in a booth here, people in the other booth, it's like you're sitting at the same table. Y'all remember how IHOPs used to, J.R. Crickets is an old IHOP that's built like that. And so one day, years ago, I was sitting there having breakfast, and this man several booths down was like, he would have been on the other side. He's just like staring at me. And finally I said, "Can I help you?" And he said, "Did you go to college?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "I could have gone to college." And he said, for the whole time I'm eating breakfast, he tells me his whole life story. And I sat there and listened to it, you know. And honestly, that kind of thing has happened my whole life. I've had people come and tell me horrible things that they've done. They're like, "Oh my God, I've never told anybody that." I'm like, "Well, I don't even know you, so I can't tell anybody, you know, but if it made you feel better." So they're just always... I've always drawn that out of strangers. Not intentionally. I mean, I can't tell how many times I've wanted to just take a nap on the plane, but the person next to me has decided they got to pour their heart out. Like, all right, whatever. I mean, let me tell you something. I may have doubted other things in my life, but baby, I ain't never doubted my calling. Ever. Ever. Because I never even had to ask for a place to preach. People just came up to me and said, "What do you know about God? Tell me." I'm like, I mean, I don't know what else I could have done. Paul said he's apprehended of the Lord. Like, yeah, I am under arrest. However, day before yesterday, I'd gone to get coffee. I told some of y'all this already. I was at a Starbucks I don't usually go to with a barista that I didn't know. As she hands me her coffee, and it's a busy day. I mean, I don't think they're encouraged to be having these conversations because people are in line. She hands me the coffee, and she says, "I'm really thinking about leaving Starbucks, and I think I want to go back to school and just start. I feel like I want to start a whole new life." And she's like this stranger telling me, "I feel like I want to start like a whole new life. Like I want a new career, a new whatever." So, I mean, I just start prophesying to her. We're in line, you know, and I said, "Well, you're at the end of a season, and sometimes it doesn't mean it's bad here. It just means," I told her my thing that I always tell you about, "you don't have to hate spring to love fall." And I said, "You've come to the end of your summer, and it's time for fall." And she's like, "Oh, my God, I can't believe that's such a confirmation of what you said." It was like, "And prophesy now." And again, I live in ministry mode so much that I didn't really think anything about it. Except when I walked out, as I was walking out, I thought, you know what? I just realized since the first of the year, since the winter solstice, since 2020, sometime recently, within the last month, maybe 2 months, strangers are still approaching me, but they're not telling me their problems as much as they're telling me their dreams. I hadn't even noticed it, but I thought, people are telling me their dreams now. And I'm confirming them. Like this guy that used to be a trainer when I was working out with Stephen, he was another one of the trainers over there. And he just recently moved to Miami, and I follow him on Instagram, and he had written this thing about he actually was supposed to be triplets, and two of his brothers were stillborn, and he was, and so I texted him, and I said, because I don't really even know this guy, but I said, if you get a chance, read my meditation from today, because that was the day I had posted the thing about at conception, billions of sperm cells are released, but only one survives. So I said, the very fact that you made it here means you've already fought the biggest battle of your life just to get here. If you've ever seen under a microscope, sperm cells are literally fighting each other for one of them to penetrate the ovum for conception to take place, and then the gestation period of 9 months. I mean, it's amazing any of us get here. Well, he types back and goes, "Oh my God, you're like just rocking my world. Like, that's amazing." And I just said, "Well, by the way," I don't even stop to think about this thing, this kind of stuff. I said, "You know, you absorbed the life force of your two brothers when they passed, because," I said, "you know, Elvis always felt his twin brother that died at birth and felt like that was a part of his success." And I said, "So you're really living out three destinies in one lifetime and bodybuilding something." And he's just like, "What the what? Like, you just changed my life." And I'm like, "I know what's happening." I mean, I don't think of myself as a prophet. I mean, I don't want to tell you, most of the prophets I've known have been a basket case. I mean, they're prophets in real life. Ugh. I mean, you think pastors are a handful. You have no idea. I mean, very few prophets have ended up well. You know, they end up dying of horrible diseases and stuff. So I'm like, you know, it's like, I feel like I'm walking more as a priest than a prophet, because I feel like people are presenting their dream to me, saying, "This is a dream I have. I'm offering this as a presentation." And I look at it and go, "Yes, that is a good dream." And I confirm it. And let me give you a couple of pointers about it. Go fulfill it. And it's a cosmic shift. So I'm not saying I'm not going to listen to people's problems anymore. I'm just saying I didn't ask for this to happen. It just shifted. It just changed. Some of the stuff that Keo was writing to me, Doug Wentz, I'm like, "Good Lord, have mercy." And then late last night, somebody that used to go to Church of the Now years ago, who's never even on Facebook, she said, "I don't even scroll by here. I just happened to notice this post." And she said, "I just want you to know, I work at Starbucks. I'm thinking about quitting. I'm wanting to go back to school and start a whole new life." And I'm like, y'all got to stop. By after seeing 1917, which is an incredible parable, it's the whole thing about that movie is about getting your message, like being true to your message and not giving up on it no matter what. Because that's what the movie's about, is these guys having to go behind enemy lines and deliver a message. So by midnight, I finally told her, I said, "Don't say anything else, because I'm already, I mean, I'm like sitting in my chair, like I'm, you know, my clothes are glowing." I thought, I swear to God, if Moses and Elijah appear up here in this loft in a minute, I'm going to freak out, because I'm up on the Mount of Transfiguration. So I've been thinking about these words. Let me share with you what I wrote about this. The next thing I have here, I'm quoting myself again, but this is what I wrote. "In the micro world of atoms and particles that is governed by the strange rules of quantum mechanics, two different observers are entitled to their own facts. In other words, according to the best theories of the building blocks of nature itself, facts can actually be subjective. Multiple realities can and do coexist. Reality manifest, or realities manifest, in the multiverse. The glass is simultaneously half full and half empty. It's not just a matter of perception. Both things are true. Two things can be true at the same time. The phrase in Genesis in the original Hebrew isn't "in the beginning God created." It's actually "in a beginning God created." Moses sends 12 men to spy out the land of Canaan, and 10 of them come back with a completely different story than that of Joshua and Caleb, and yet they are all telling the truth about what they saw there. On the day of Pentecost, Peter stands up and sternly rebukes his audience for murdering an innocent man, and in the very same breath says that the crucifixion happened according to God's plan. The worst thing that ever happened to you can be the best thing that ever happened. Multidimensional reality is an important part of ancient wisdom. Jesus spoke of the manifestation of a 30-fold, 60-fold, and 100-fold return of the same seed that the sower sowed. Paul talked about the good and acceptable and perfect will of God being the proof of the renewed mind. The tree of life, and this is possibly my favorite sentence I've ever written in years of writing. The tree of life has infinitely more branches than does the limited binary choices offered by the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Observers are powerful players in the quantum world, and this goes deeper than just the perception is reality piece. Perception is undoubtedly important, but the reality is that reality is reality. According to a certain theory in quantum physics, particles can be in several places or states at once. This theory is called superposition. This is, now let me tell you something, this is why I feel like I've been doing it, I think some of you are doing it, even if you don't, or you're not aware of it. When you're finding things, it's because they're existing in two places. My gloves were in New York, my gloves were in Atlanta. How is that possible? I don't know how to explain that to you, but it's called superposition. And I believe perception is reality, but I'm talking about something deeper. Somebody recently shared something with me that they had said to their child that was a negative thing that actually happened exactly as they said it. And yet, the result of it is actually a blessing in their life. So they regret that it happened, but they love that it happened. I tell you, you know how you can understand it? If you've had a loved one that passed away, and you felt equally sad and relieved. It's like you feel like if they were suffering, like somebody's had cancer for a long time. When they finally die or whatever you call it, you feel sad, you feel relieved, and you really hold those two emotions at the same time. You totally miss them, but you don't want to bring them back. And you think, well, that sounds like split personality. No, it's. It's multiple realities. It's a heartbreak when your mother passes. It's a relief when your mother's not suffering. It's not an either or. You're feeling the two things together. That's why you can't tell people not to mourn, because mourning doesn't mean they're not happy. It's ridiculous when people say, oh, they're in a better place, don't cry, whatever. That's ridiculous. You're supposed to cry. That's why, again, last week when Wellington told me his childhood friend of his had passed, I didn't try to make him feel better about it. I didn't say, well, at least she's not suffering now. Come on, because there's nothing. It hurts when you lose somebody. I know they're in a better place. That doesn't help me. I know I'll see him again. That's not the point. The point is, just weep with those that weep. You know what I did? I hugged him. I said, oh, buddy, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I know that hurts. It nearly would be, it's superficial to try to comfort people in that way, because you're missing the point. That they've accepted it. They're just feeling the pain of it. No, you're not. Well, it's like that proverb that says, he who sings songs to him who is of a heavy heart is like one who takes away a coat in winter. So, sometimes when somebody tries to cheer you up about something, you're like, oh, yeah, you're making this worse. I'm not trying to feel sorry for myself, but let me have a moment of grief. Grieving, listen to me, grieving is not unhappiness. They're different things. Grieving is it's a rite of passage. It's an important part of the... Now, if you see someone just can't shake it and they've shut down, then sometimes you might have to say to them, you've got to move on. You've got to let it go. There's a scene in this movie, I don't want to do spoiler alerts, but there's a scene where in the two soldiers that are trying to deliver this message, one of them dies. And it's very, I mean, we're both sobbing on it because it's a very powerful scene. And so the one that survives, because it was the other guy's mission, he goes and he meets this, I guess he's a captain, who says, I'm sorry about your friend. He said, but I'm going to tell you something. Don't linger on it. Which, and I knew what he meant, because in war, people are dying so much, you don't have time to, you got to keep going. So I understood the metaphor of that. But it's okay. Like, Ken's mother's birthday would have been Friday. It's a natural thing for him to feel a bit of sadness. And so I said, how old would she have been today? She would have been my mom's age. Okay, we go to dinner that night. He tries to take the check. No, I'm paying for it tonight. We're honoring your mom. So, you know, and we weren't morbid. We didn't sit there and cry, whatever. We're just like, oh, I wish she was here in the flesh to celebrate with you. We're not being maudlin. We had a great time. You know, we're laughing, we're taking pictures, whatever. But we're also aware that, yes, today there's soberness in the day. That's a realistic way to be happy. You know, James says, when you come together, if there's any of you merry, let them sing songs. If they're troubled, let them pray. If there's any sick, let them call for the elders of the church. Like he was saying, it's not monolithic. People are all over the place emotionally. Meet them at their point of need. Paul said, when you come together, one of you has a word, one of you has an exhortation, one of you has... That's why I'm not against leading worship, but here's the drawback when you've got... It's all about leading worship. Some people aren't in the mode that day. It doesn't mean they don't love God. It just means they're doing the best they could just to get to church today. Don't stand up there and yell at me about raising my hands and jumping and leaping, whatever. It might be appropriate for me to sit here, and I don't want anybody to feel sorry for me. I don't even need anybody to pray for me. I want to be in this atmosphere. And I don't even necessarily want to talk about it, but I don't feel like running right now. So don't read more into it. That's the biggest problem with charismatic theology. It's like it comes up with this idea that everybody's supposed to respond the exact same way. That's not necessarily true. This theory is called superposition. Oddly, this is only the case when the particles aren't observed. However, the second you observe a quantum system, it picks a specific location or state which breaks the superposition. The fact that nature behaves this way has been proven multiple times in the lab as the subatomic world is studied. If any two or three of you agree as touching anything simply means if any two or three of you see and agree on the existence of the same reality. That's all it is. That's all agreement is can you come here for a minute and look out the house from my window? And if two of us can see the same thing, we will we'll manifest exponentially. Okay? I said, keep turning the dial until you find your right reality today. Everything is everything. Let him who has an ear hear. And the reason I said everything is everything is we have this idea that I'm praying for a breakthrough because then I won't have that problem anymore. You've got to change the way that you think. You've been through some of the hardest things you could go through in recent months. You've had some of your greatest breakthroughs in recent months. Is it the worst time you've ever been through? Yes. Is it the best time you've ever been through? Yes. Both those realities coexist. It's not an either or. Happiness doesn't come. You don't get happy when you say, well, when this thing gets better, let's pray till this thing gets better, then I'll be happy. That's very... sophomoric theology. The higher place is everything's always okay at all times. And that doesn't mean I'm in denial of the negative. It means I can just turn that diamond just that. It's like, you ever go to the ophthalmologist and they're like, better, 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 better. Or like you're on the plane and it's like, you know, like, like, well, it's just not that. It's very incremental. Those of you who listen to podcasts, I was acting out reclining your seats, which there's very little recline to it. Like, okay, I'm reclining. Oh, wow. Woo, that's better. holistic thinking is everything's happening to me all at once, and it's okay. It's just life, and I learn how to prevail in it, and I'm constantly observing everything. Everything ultimately turns into a blessing for me, but sometimes blessings come disguised as curses. It's what we used to call blessings in disguise. Did you hear that? Yes. What I just... I just had a vision of being at a masquerade ball. You're walking through and everybody you see as they're in costume, they're masked. Every one of them is a blessing. I don't see it yet. I don't see who you are yet. But I'm in the midst of blessing. Well, it doesn't look like blessing. No, everything in my life is a blessing. Everything will ultimately be a blessing. It could masquerade for years as a curse. The Lord will perfect that which concerns. The Lord will unmask and reveal every... Then I used this quote, which says basically the same thing. Being present is being connected to all things. And then... I had one more thing up there. What was it? I did like this quote. But before I end with this quote and we go into meditation, let me say this because I've been feeling this really strong this week, and this message is trying to work out. Every day you have to eat. You sit down, you eat food, you swallow the food, you digest the food, you eliminate the food. You do it the next day. You do it the next day. You do it. You've been doing it since before you knew how to do it. I mean, your primal instinct was to cry when you got hungry. And when you were ready to mess up your diaper, you made no apology for it. It's like, I gotta eat, gotta poop. It's just like, that's just a natural, every baby got that. You came in. I think I look at George Harrison's album cover. He's sitting out there in those boots, sitting out in the pasture. And it says, all things must pass. I always love that album. Everything that happens to you is supposed to pass through you. Everything that you encounter, every conversation, everything that happens, you're supposed to process it. Let it work for you. If it's supposed to nourish you in some way, you assimilate it, and then you leave it behind. I mean, that's just biology 101. I've become very aware that I'm not saying sickness isn't real. I'm not telling you to go throw away your meds. I do think people are suffering from cell memory much more than they realize. I think there are things that people encounter in their life they don't properly process it. They don't digest it. They don't eliminate it. And it lodges somewhere in their body. And it has, everything has to move. Everything's got to go somewhere. So it doesn't, if the, every word wants to become flesh. So that, have you ever had somebody say something to you that was hurtful and you just kept thinking about it and you kept thinking about it and then you would talk about it and you would talk about it and years later you could still say, I remember that time they said so and so. And as you're saying, it was like time travel. Like you went right back to that and you felt, you relived all the emotion. You could tell and you feel the anger you felt in 1974 or whatever. Think about if you're collecting these over the years. You've been carrying these words around in you that are trying to become flesh. Where else are they going to go? They become cancer. They become diabetes. It's got to go somewhere. Exactly. Things don't just disappear. They go somewhere. The energy always goes. So again, I'm not trying to judge anybody. Like, I know why you're sick. That's what I'm saying is, if our cells are being renewed as frequently as biologists say that they are. Have you ever read, I don't know the exact numbers, but it's like there's a table that shows you get new skin every X amount of days, new bones every, new, I mean, basically there's a new you every, I don't know what. I know the whole process happens in about 7 years. Some things happen quicker than others, but there's constantly, you're getting new hair, new skin, new nails, new everything. So then why do we get disease? Why do we age? Why is that happening? A lot of it is cell memory. I mean, I've been in the middle of retelling some negative thing that happened, and I've just had, in the middle of it, spirit say to me, like, are you really want to tell that again? You really want to tell it again? Because if you tell it again, you're about to relive it. You're going to put your body through it again. And I'm not saying just ignore it. I'm saying process it. Figure it out. Why did that person say that? Try to understand it. Not justify it, but try to understand it. And I'm not talking about somebody toxic in your life that's just bad news. You know, at some point you have to say, this person is just bad for me. I just need to be aware. I'm talking about just that person that for some reason says this thing that you keep thinking or something that you've said about yourself. Those words are constantly trying to manifest into the flesh. So what's that got to do with superposition? Well, it can exist as a memory. It can exist as a disease. Or it can exist as a lesson learned. Baby, you can't live without forgiveness. More people they don't even know it. More people have died from unforgiveness, I guarantee you, than have died from cancer. Right. And it doesn't mean it didn't hurt. It means you process it. You've got to process it. I'm not advocating denial. I'm not saying act like it didn't happen. I think that's just as destructive. I'm saying process it however you need to. If you have to go to the person and say, I've got to understand, why did you say that to me? You can get a lot closer to healing than telling 100 other people what they said. And you think about, look at all the, dear Lord, think about all the people in the world who have unhealed things from previous relationships, who bring all of their sickness all of their pathology into the new relationship, who the person they're trying to, they're dealing with their stuff. Sometimes you find somebody that helps you heal. That, boy, that's abundant life. I remember this is the process has slowed down in the nearly 8 years we've been together, but when Ken and I first got together, he didn't even know, I didn't even know how to explain it to him. But there would just be little off-the-cuff things that he would say that I would think, you have no idea how much I needed to hear those exact words. And it's not even, I can't explain why I needed to hear somebody say that to me, but thank you. And now that you've said it, I will replace what I feel when that was not said to me before, or the opposite was said to me. Now I'm going to replace this. And it's not, it's easy. It's, you know what? It's a transplant. It's like getting a new kidney and like, did the body accept it? Yeah, it accepted it. It's fine. How many years is, Jack, how many years is, what's his name, had Jackie's kidney now? Like, it's been 10 years, isn't it? At least. Still works, doesn't it? Still works. How do you ever, how could he ever give her anything back? Like, remember that time I gave you a kidney? But it worked. He's male. He's African-American. Her white lady kidney. And I'm sure every day of his life that he doesn't have to go through dialysis, I'm sure the thought, he's like, yay. Yay, new kidney. Oh, did you really? A new thought is like a transplant. A new word is like a transplant. Didn't you tell me yesterday that was you telling me a woman just did a uterus transplant and she got pregnant? Yeah, that's the first I've ever heard of that. And there's a Christine and I used to like watch like really horrible sci-fi movies from the 50s, and one of them that we used to watch was the Brain That Wouldn't Die, and it's actually the woman that was in it, she just passed away this past year. It's a horrible movie. That's why we loved it so much. But in the movie, this was made in 61, I think, and the whole premise of the movie is that this guy was a mad scientist because he wanted to perform transplants on people. And that was considered so out there. I remember when, in the late 60s, when Dr. Christian Barnard did the first heart transplant. Remember that was all over the news. That was a huge thing. The whole thing was he was in a car accident, and his fiance, she died, but he took her back to the lab, and her body was all messed up, so he kept her head alive with electrodes and he was looking for another body. It's horrible. It's so good. But the point is you know, he's always looking for a body. And but it's just funny that people, you know, I was reading, this was years ago, a guy that got both his arms cut off and they reattached him, and it showed a picture of him carrying his bride over the threshold. Like he had to go back down a mine shaft and somebody had to find his arms and reattach them. I know, it's gross, isn't it? But isn't that amazing? So, I mean, that kind of stuff happens all the time. Then if that could happen, how much... Yeah. Yeah. And it's not an either or. See, that's the thing. If you're waiting for when's the time going to be? Like this marriage premarital counseling I did yesterday. A couple I'm not even married, but I said, look, I'm just going to tell you, I don't really do premarital counseling, especially not for a couple I'm not marrying. But let me just say some things to you. I see y'all been together 4 years. You've lived together 4 years. I'm assuming y'all figured out a way to coexist. I visited one of you in the hospital. two or three times, and every time I'm there, the other one was there. So obviously you've got the in sickness and in health part. I said, as far as the nuanced things about legal matters and everything, I'm not an attorney. I can't tell you about how to do all that kind of stuff. You need to go see some. I said, but let me just tell you, I mean, do you love each other? Do you like being together? Yeah. Do you want to be with anybody else? No. Then go get married. I mean, I wish I could tell you it's more complicated than that, but really, that's all it is. And it doesn't mean your life's going to be perfect. And as long as both of you want to be married, you'll be married. I don't want to oversimplify it, but I know over the years when a couple would come to me whose marriage is on the rocks and I could tell one of them was checked out, like they were already mentally out of there. I couldn't say it as the pastor who's supposed to believe in the impossible, but I'd want to say, can I just save us both some time? He's out of here. Like for whatever reason, he doesn't want to be here. And we can put Band-Aids on this for the next 2 years, but at the end of the 2 years, he's going to leave you anyway and you're going to lose 2 years of your life. So, I mean, go to the seminars if you need to and read the books and you can do all that kind of stuff, but I'm just telling you, you can't, if two people, the only reason, this is the only way marriage works. I read the other day, marriage ends up basically being two people yelling, what, from the other room? That's so true. basically, here's the secret. Two people want to be married to each other. That's it. What happens when the marriage breaks up? Because one of them doesn't want to be married anymore. I mean, that's it. Well, it's because that other woman came in. Now, I'm going to tell you something. Nobody steals anybody from anybody. Well, everything was fine until, now, she didn't steal him. He was already checked out. He was looking for an exit route, exit strategy. I'm just telling you. Now I'm at a point in my life where I don't have time to pretend for hours and hours and hours with people about stuff that I can just save us both some time. Life coaching is important. I'm not talking about life coaching. Life coaching is great. I'm talking about when somebody has a specific, particularly a relationship problem. I don't know how to handle it. Well, it's whatever's going to happen is going to happen. You could maybe get another year out of it, you know, whatever. But I'm just telling you, if the person, well, you know. If I don't shut up, we're never going to meditate. I do. I love this. This quote explains so much of kind of where I'm at right now. This is Blake Crouch. It says, imagine you're a fish swimming in a pond. You can move forward and back, side to side, but never up out of the water. If someone were standing beside the pond watching you, you'd have no idea they were there. To you, that little pond is an entire universe. Now imagine that someone reaches down and lifts you out of the pond. You see that what you thought was the entire world is only a small pool. You see other ponds, trees, the sky above. You realize you're a part of a much larger and more mysterious reality than you had ever dreamed of. Let me tell you what, I'm not mad at Christianity. I understand Christianity. I love Jesus. I love the New Testament. I don't necessarily identify as Christian, but that's not out of some kind of hostility. It's not like I'm mad at them. I'm not only not mad at them, I get it. I have an understanding of it. I have an affinity for it. I can get together, like sometimes when Bishop Pearson comes to town, he wants to go to my aunt's house and sing old hymns. And well, you know, by the third or fourth hymn, I'll be tearing up on something. You know, it's like I have a soft spot that I don't want to lose. I don't want to not have affection for that. That is just a pond, though. That's not the entire universe, and it sustained me for years. I wouldn't be where I am had it not been for that pond. But something pulled me out of it. And if you're still swimming in that pond, namaste. I get it. I honor it. I can't. Because let me tell you what happened. What? Well, you might not be able to. Goldfish and sharks, they grow to the size of their environment. So there's some, it's not, I'm not better than anybody else. It's just like, once I got out of that environment, I grew so quick. I grew to a larger dimension. I can't breathe in there. There's no room in there. I respect it. I get it. If it's your mother, and when I say your mother, you know, Paul talked about his theology being his mother. When it pleased the Lord who separated me from my mother's womb, he revealed his son in me. In other words, I didn't have to find him through Moses' law. He was already there. God was already in me. I will never, for the rest of my life, I will never tell somebody to ask Jesus to come in their heart. And I did it for years. What I will do now is say, recognize that God's already in you. And man, if you can get people to recognize that, they'll start coming up with, you know, I remember there was this one night that I was drunk out of my mind. And I don't know how I got home, but somehow I woke up, you know, all safe and sound. You think that was God? I'm like, yep. Yeah, it was. You mean God's been working in my life all my life? Yeah. Yeah, but did God see all the stuff I was doing? God's not a perv. This idea that God's trying to see who you had sex with and you know, whatever, like, really? Y'all need to get a less sexualized God. That's like when somebody says, I just think God looks at two men being together. He's just, that's just disgusting. Well, what is that? Is he looking at heterosexual couples going, yeah, baby, that's the way I like it. I mean, really? Is that what, I mean, why do you have a God? Why do you have such a peeping Tom God anyway? Like, I'm just amazed at how much Christians are obsessed with people's sexuality. You're like, why is this so much a part of your thinking? Eddie, you got to stop now. And I don't want to ever disrespect anybody's belief system. Belief system is important. You can't mock somebody's belief system. You can't make fun of them for believing it. Because for them, this is what I believe about the multiverse. This is why I don't even argue with people about hell anymore. If some people are just hell-bent on having hell, I'm like, you know what? Maybe it's real for you. You know, maybe the reality you're creating, there's a literal burning hell. So I'm not even going to try to tell you it doesn't exist, because in your reality, it may exist. So if that somehow is your moral compass, then fine. I'm not trying to take it away. Some people get really upset when you take hell away from them. So I'm like, well, then keep it. Keep all the hell you, I mean. Seriously, I don't like, my days of, you couldn't, well, I'm going to say you couldn't pay me. Depends on what you pay me. For a price. But just to give it up for free and argue with you about hell, I'm like, I don't care if you think it. I don't care if you think I'm going to hell. I don't care. I mean, I really don't care. Do you know how many people told me I'm going to hell? Do you honestly? I mean, so many people more influential than you have already told me that. You really think that's the best you got? That's what, honestly, I haven't had a hate letter in years now. Because when I got to the point that I didn't care anymore, it's like, it went from being hurtful to being sad to being funny. And once it became funny, it stopped. I mean, I'm telling you, it stopped. So if you need hell, hell it up. And I don't mean, you know, I'm like, I don't mean to be sound callous about that. I'm like, I understand that's your background. Somebody recently who I felt should have known better private messaged me and said, I have a similar background to yours. My story is basically your story. I read your book, and your book, I could just as easily have written it. I'm going through a lot of sickness, a lot of terrible stuff, and I'm just wondering, do you think God is punishing me? And I said, this is such a ridiculous thing for you to even suggest that I'm not even going to respond to this, and this conversation never happened. Because I thought, this is, you're so out of line to be trying to find some way to self-flagellate, because, like, really, you should know better than this, and I'm not even going to qualify this with a comeback. Yeah. I know. There is no fear in love, but perfect love casts out fear. Because he who has fear has torment and is not made perfect in love. Nobody's punishing you. Even in this post I did last night, one of the comments, somebody that I from my past had written something. It was okay, but in the comment she said something about, I know the enemy, like she referred to the enemy, like, I know the enemy does this kind of thing, whatever. And there's no point in me trying to argue with her or whatever, but I thought, wow, you really still live in that, you know, I want to go, do you believe in dragons and unicorns and leprechauns and whatever? Because it's real. But if you believe, I'm telling you, if you believe there's a boogeyman under your bed, there'll be a boogeyman under your bed. So if you, the people who believe in spiritual warfare fight it all the time. I'm telling you, I got to shut up, but there's, I've got a river of life flowing out of me. Well, I know a very powerful prophet, one of the most accurate prophets I ever knew, who was very much a part of my life for many years. I watched him deteriorate in later years and die of brain cancer a couple of years ago, a really bad death. And think, wow, that shouldn't happen to you. And I remember a conversation saying, "What?" I said, I love the prophetic side, but what's the deal with the warfare? Like, there's so much. Like, I remember him saying, every city I go into, there's a thunderstorm because the demonic powers are fighting me. I said, you really think that? I mean, really, you think they're that organized that, like, you don't think you're making that happen because you expect it, whatever? No, it's the devil. And I thought, wow, you have such a beautiful gift. But we know in part and we prophesy in part. Just because somebody has a gift doesn't mean they don't have blind spots. And I watched this person over the years talk more about the devil, more about the devil, more about kicking devil butt, whatever. And then I saw that devil take him out. And I thought, see, when you create a devil, you lose. Because it takes on it grows. It's like, what's the, you know, like, it's like a boulder going down. It's like the, with every congregation that you stand in front of and you're having them chant against the devil, you're making this about a devil. Yeah. Well, exactly. Exactly. And I'm not mentioning names. Most of you know what I'm talking about. And that's not even judgment. That's learn from that Because I remember 20 years ago saying to him, man, I'm totally with you on everything except seems like we're fighting the devil a whole lot. Like, can we just, because, I mean, you have to understand, I cut my teeth on E.W. Kenyon and you know, the triumph of the cross and, you know, now the God of this world is cast down. So even when I was still in charismatic world, the devil, you know, those of you that heard me for a long time, I was never, you know, the devil wasn't a part of my repertoire. No, I just, because even when I believed or said I believed there was an entity called the devil, I still believe he was defeated. So even, you know, seeing it through my, even if he was real, it's like, well, he's a non-issue. Satan has come to me, but there's nothing in me. So, but if you're, you know, you just watch what happens with these warfare conferences. You follow the lives of these people. There are all kind of craps happening to them all the time. Why? Because they're looking for it. They're expecting it. They're creating it. And I say that with utmost respect of somebody who I believe was profoundly gifted, who should not have, I mean, really? All these years you've led chants about kicking devil butt and you die of brain cancer? Well, you can't say God did it, so you got it. What? You were going to say something? Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Doc said he knows better. Now we know in part, but then shall we know even as also we are known. But see, you said it before service, talking about something you manifested recently. You said, I went within. When Paul said, now we see through a glass darkly, that's misinterpreted. You go back and read it. Mirrors weren't made out of glass back then. They were made out of brass. He said, we see in a mirror darkly, but then face to face. If you keep looking for God up in the sky, you will never find God. God's in here. God's. Yeah. Yes, sir. And the more you polish that image, it's like, you know, it's like, I don't know if y'all know what I'm talking. I'm sure those of you that have children know what I'm talking about, but it's an amazing thing about DNA. I was looking at my children sitting around the table Thursday night. And two of them I have with one mother, and two of them I have with another mother. And in looking at all of them, I can see their mothers and I can see me. Like at the same time, it's the craziest thing about, like last night we were with Judah and I was looking at him and he'll look like Debbie, he looks like me, and he looks like him. There's a third reality that's unique to him. And I don't know how to explain it, but like there's a way. Right through here, Christina looks like her mother's mother. I tell her, I said, I don't know why, there's something about you that looks like Joe right there. I don't. And then I'll see pictures of me as a baby that looks like Clementine. I mean, DNA is crazy. But God's in our DNA. Like, I can look at me and go, yeah, that looks like Jimmy. That looks like Darlene. That looks like me. I can look at it and go, that looks like God. That looks like me. Oh. There I am. It's God in me. Is it? It's God. It's me. God. You got right there. Let's go. Well, now we know in part, then shall we know also as we are known. Not as we will be known. As we are known. When you go to whatever the afterlife is, whatever heaven is, you're not going to be transformed. You're going to be who you already are. You're going to step out of this into that, but it'll still be you. Let's take the lights down. Charles, start me some music, please. It's Sit up straight, feet on the floor, empty your lap. Let these words saturate. Breathe in through your nose, hold it. Out through your mouth. In through your nose. Out through your mouth. You know what to do. Just begin to breathe. Most of you start getting there about the third breath. Let your thoughts settle down. Think whatever you need to think and then process. Move out of it. The words that have been spoken today, honor the Spirit of God, Father God, Mother God, Spirit God, Creator God. God that was manifested as Jesus. And then Jesus said, it's necessary that I go away so that you receive that God, that Spirit. That I am. If you listen to this podcast, just breathe where you are. Through your nose, out through your mouth. Inhale, exhale. Inhale, exhale. Into a place of serenity. Become aware of your higher self, your higher consciousness. Thank you. Spirit is vibrating over the face of the deep. Creation continues as the universe expands. And it is saying, become light. And out of the submerged chaos, it is becoming light. Leave the lights down, and again, I'm not going to play the outro. You know what to do. Thank you for giving. Appreciate you doing that, knowing how to do that. I don't have to prime you to give. You already believe in what we're doing, so thank you for your continued support. Give online when you can. It's very easy to do. I'm just going to go out with the music like this, with the lights like this. Go in peace.